Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. All right, here we go. It is the 21st day of April, 2017. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. And that, of course, is where you go. And you click on the little tab that says chat room if you want to jump into the real-time multimedia madcap extravaganza, the wacky, zany world that is The Horn Chat between the hours of 6 and 9 p.m., Eastern Daylight Time, 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, and something like 8 to 11 down in Sydney. Right. Pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and you will be met immediately and welcomed joyfully by... All right, guys, work up the joyful, will you? By Jug of Punch and Labor Man and Lamar and Squeaky 41 and Steve from Georgistan, all capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third-stage guild navigator and probably having some leftover spice from yesterday, has folded space to become Man Cave. Happy birthday wishes going out this evening to midweek utility chat room moderator Steve from Georgistan. Happy birthday, Steve. I hope that... I always loved it when birthdays landed on Fridays. Made them extra special, super double-plus good fun. So, happy birthday, Steve, and let me add one more, since I will not be, tomorrow's Saturday, and I won't be on air. Happy birthday to my beloved bride, Agnes, the Viking warrior princess. Happy birthday, baby. Happy birthday. So, it's Friday on the front porch. Here in about 57 minutes or so, we will fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable that is the Horn Molloy Skype chat group, capably moderated for lo these many years by, well, inveterate, indefatigable, veteran Horn Molloy Skype chat group moderator, Sparky. If you've never participated in Friday on the Front Porch before, it's real easy. All you need is Skype. It's not hard to figure out. Send a note on Skype, not to me, not Bob Kincaid Horn. That's for the rest of the week. If you want to be in the Skype group, you need to send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, one word, SparkyDunk, Sparky Dunk. And he'll show you the breadcrumb trail, and he'll tell you which quadrant of the sky to look into for when he turns on the, flips the switch to the Bob signal. Okay? Cool. And if you absolutely can't make Skype go, we have one line for you, to wit, namely, the stress line, 304-663-4676. That spells Horn, H-O-R-N. 304-663-4676. And that's available to you if you absolutely cannot use Skype. And we'll get it all going here at the top of the coming hour. Okay? Okay. This is, of course, a listener-supported broadcast operation. And I have huge thanks to send out this evening because we would have been in a terrible fix were it not for our subscribers and some overnight help from friends like Alma and Frank and our subscribers, including Joan from Talibandiana, we would have been in a $580 hole this evening. But a whole bunch of that got knocked down, so that it's only a $340. It's tonight plus $140 more. So that's one at 340, two at 170, four at 85, eight at 4250, 16 at 21 and a quarter. And after that, it gets complicated. But that's where we are. If you want to help out, go to headonradionetwork.com, click on the Contribute tab. And if you'd like to become a subscriber, click that button. We love our subscribers. We value our subscribers. We treasure our subscribers. Because it's y'all who get us over the hump when evening fundraising doesn't go quite as we hoped, as was the case last night. So thank you all very kindly. $340 to go this evening. If you don't want to be a subscriber, you just want to help out, just fill out the form, get to the next screen. And that's about all there is to it. It's nice to get notes from people who aren't Dan Snyder or Dan Halen or whoever he was, and instead get some positive feedback. Terry in Amherst, Massachusetts, is having some trouble subscribing, and I don't exactly know how to sort that out. But Terry says, I found your program on TuneIn 3 weeks ago, and describes it as extraordinary. And is even going so far as to reach out to UMass Radio, although I got to tell you, the FCC is not going to be amused. But still, even absent terrestrial radio, Terry, thank you for the kind words. Thank you so very, very much. I hope you're hearing this. Your kind words and the kind words of others mean so very much and have meant so very much going forward over the years. It's the reason, it's a big part. The way the community feels about the program they have created is why this program has existed for as long as it has. It's extremely inspiring. And, you know, even if we're not on terrestrial radio, Terry, spread the word. Everybody's got a computer now. Everybody's walking around with a computer in their pocket and with the TuneIn app. Well, everybody can listen. We don't send a bill. This is entirely a matter of voluntary support, and and that's what makes it so special. I mean, I joke about things like Porsches and Maybachs and Gulfstream 5s and Agnes's masseur, but those are all just imaginary. We're all just working folks, getting to the next screen, as it were. So thank you. Thank you, Terry. Thank you very much indeed. Terry says, you make me proud of being an American and not ashamed. I listen to you every night without fail. What you're doing is nothing short of heroic, especially considering everything you're dealing with on and off the air. Thank you for everything you're doing. I think you're amazing, wonderful, and beautiful. Well, we'll withhold judgment on the beautiful part, Terry. I've been called a lot of things in the 54 years on this planet. Beautiful ain't one of them. So let's just be clear. Thank you, Asa. Thank you for deflating. Thank you for deflating my swelling head, because Agnes is not here to apply the C-clamp. Bunch of sycophants. You probably paid them to write in those flattering letters, Bob. Yep. Just kind of get used to that, Terry. Somebody will call in and write in and call you a sycophant soon. So that's okay. That's okay. Because y'all don't know from sycophant until you see. I mean, I'm the sycophant here. I'm the fan. I'm the fan of the entire Horn Family Community congregation. So we've got ourselves a birthday Friday on the front porch. And we'll see what folks want to talk about once we get that started. Thank you, Steve, a member of the fraternity of Steve in New York. Well, that kind of had to happen, didn't it? Steve from New York. Stop telling us how to be sycophants, Bob. Y'all aren't going to let that go, are you? Nor should you. That just never stops being funny. Steve also says, put me down for a $10 challenge. So the first 10 bucks that come in this evening will be doubled by courtesy of Steve in New York. Thank you, Steve. Thank you very much indeed. Well, I know you have plenty of sea clamps in the man cave, but there's a couple of thousand miles of distance between us unless, I don't know, do your third stage guild navigator powers extend to being able to throw a sea clamp like a boomerang with precision, Tomahawk land attack cruise missile accuracy and have that thing land on my little noggin? I gotta think it's gonna hurt. But nonetheless, I appreciate the sentiment, Sparky. All righty then. I got plenty of sea clamps. I'll try not to tell you how to be sycophants for the rest of the evening, if that's okay. Yeah, because according to the correspondence, you guys have got it all figured out anyway, so what am I worried about? Oh, where to go this evening? We've got a lot. Just because I get all wrought about the Constitution. I'm just going to start here. Did you happen to notice that in the last 24 hours, Geezer discussed us? And his nasty AG, Jefferson Davis Beauregard Secessions III. Yeah, you see there, I just added the secessions. It's almost like a stutter. Secessions. But it works, doesn't it? Cowbell for me. They've announced that they might use the massive powers of the government to go after the Lügenpresse. Mm-hmm. This should serve. And look, okay, we've talked about this in the past, that one of those old saws that they teach in the first 15 minutes of the first hour of the first class of the first day of the first week of the first year of law school. And that old saw says, hard cases make bad law. And this is a classic case of that. Comrade Kumquat and Jefferson Davis Beauregard Secessions III have declared that, well, you know, they're rethinking that whole prosecuting WikiLeaks thing. And now I realize when I say this, I'm just probably ponerizing the daylights out of you. I mean, you don't spend all that money on a ponerizing ray and not use the damn thing. But I'm not a fan of WikiLeaks because they do seem to have an agenda. You'll notice there wasn't just a great outpouring of information from the servers of the Republican National Committee, which also got hacked. Let's not forget that. Well, We didn't think there's anything worth releasing there.
Oh, really? You mean nobody in the Republican Party said anything nasty about anybody else? I have a hard time believing that. I really, really do have a hard time believing that. That's okay. I don't think WikiLeaks is a journalistic organization. Journalism involves, among other things, editorial decisions. And there's not much in the way of an editorial decision in just doing massive document dumps to try to hurt one side or another of a contest in which you've decided that you know what's right and everybody else. Is wrong. So, you know, if I got up tomorrow morning and I found out that Julian Assange had been run over by a bus and that there were no skid marks in front of his squished personage, I'm not going to go into mourning. I'm not going to weep. Julian Assange is... And this is a complicated philosophical concept, I realize. Julian Assange is...
You dick!
Yes, he's a right-wing, libertarian-oriented troll. Who has the journalistic ethics of... What's one of the fever that gives you Ebola? He's got the journalistic ethics of the Ebola virus. So this is, I don't, you know. But the fact of the matter is, hard cases make bad law. And this most assuredly qualifies as a hard case. For reasons that I have just enumerated. You know, it's not like... Now, I realize that there is a certain contingent of people, usually the same people who think that Pooty Poot is just a snuggly, hugsome, wonderful, cuddly, autocratic, brutal, goddamn dictator who kills his own, kills his own people, yes, and looks the other way while people who are, you know, homosexual get stomped and maimed and murdered. But there's a group of people that just love him. They just love him. They just think he's so wonderful. He's so, and oh, look at his shaven pecs. Okay? I realize those people are out there. Don't care. And they're generally the same people who run out in defense of a walking bleached blonde turd like Julian Assange. And let's be clear, I'd say the same thing about Julian Assange if he had WikiLeaked, courtesy of the Russians, RNC stuff. If he'd done the RNC and the DNC. And I really, really do not think he is a journalist. That's what he keeps saying. Oh, a journalist. No. He's a filter of data and a disseminator thereof with no judgment and no ethics. But nonetheless, now that Comrade Kumquat and Jefferson Davis Beauregard Secessions the Hood have said that they're re-examining whether or not maybe it'd be a good idea to prosecute Julian Assange, well, no, I'm not going to get on that boat. Not going to get on board with that.
It's a terrible idea, and it's the kind of idea you would only expect from the likes of, you know, the Tangerine Tiberius regime. The First Amendment is the First Amendment, and it protects journalism, or else it's just a life support system for the religion industry, which I have argued from time to time. Mm-hmm. And among other things mentioned in the story that I read last night is the notion that maybe the AG Secessions would like to do is to perhaps utilize the Espionage Act, which is truly a nasty piece of business and should have been off the books eons ago, but isn't. This is the kind of thing that was used to persecute people who dissented from the United States' entry into the First World War. You know, after Woodrow Wilson campaigned in 1916 on, "He kept us out of war." Not for long, chumps. It's vile. And it is toxic to whatever we may think of, whatever we may think about our essential press freedoms. According to CNN, as reported by The Guardian, the Office of Attorney General Secessions has already prepared charges. Yeah. Now here's where it gets interesting. You do, of course, remember during the seemingly endless months of the presidential campaign, you do remember those Nuremberg-style rallies that Trump would hold, and he's being sued for at least one of them in Louisville, Kentucky, where he encouraged people to beat the shit out of folks. You may recall that along the way, some of his economically anxious followers walked around pointing at reporters and yelling, "Lügenpresse! Lügenpresse!" This being a word straight out of the Third Reich, meaning lying press. You might also recall that within the same time frame, Trump himself said that he was going to revisit the laws of this country because, of course, laws need to be revisited anytime anyone says anything about the Clementine Caligula that he doesn't like. So what we have in this story is a stalking horse. Yesterday, down in El Paso, Texas, Jefferson Davis Beauregard Secessions the Hood said, "We're going to step up our effort, and already are stepping up our efforts on all leaks. This is a matter that's gone beyond anything I'm aware of. We have professionals that have been in the security business of the United States for many years. A little shocked by the number of leaks and some of them quartzes, so yes, it's a priority. We've already begun to step up our efforts, and whenever a case can be made, we'll seek to put some people in jail." Wonder who those people might be. Because one of them's not going to be Julian Assange. He's holed up in the Ecuadorian embassy there in London, and he's not, he may spend the rest of his days there. But Ecuador's not going to give him up. What, is Trump going to drop a Moab on Quito? Wait a minute, don't give him any ideas. Oh, and by the way, for the people who go, yeah, but Obama. The Obama Justice Department and the Obama administration made a conscious decision not to attempt to prosecute WikiLeaks. And if you ever wanted proof that Julian Assange is a right-wing turd, the fact that he sounded just like any other right-wing turd, when the Obama administration is going to come and get me. Oh, they're after me. Oh, geez, dude, Jesus, Dill Harris. Obama going to eat my liver out with his spare, sharp muslin Kenyan tifuses. It should be enough. Because the Obama administration did no such thing. Well, that's true, labor man in the chat room pointing out. Bob Scrump would not have any idea where Quito is. That is Ecuador, isn't it? I haven't forgotten my sixth grade Latin American geography, have I? And yeah, that's a problem because it wasn't too long back that the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini was wandering around saying, I love WikiLeaks. I love WikiLeaks. I definitely love WikiLeaks. I love them slow in the driveway. Huh? But like I said, this is a stalking horse. If they can do this and get and nail some pelt to a wall, then they will in turn use that to begin coming after more legitimate practitioners of journalism. And that's one of those moments where any idea of our democracy, I know, will just go swirling down the toilet. Meanwhile, Mike Pompeo, who directs the CIA now, said, it's time to call out WikiLeaks for what it really is, a non-state hostile intelligence service often abetted by state actors like Russia. Julian Assange has no First Amendment freedoms. He's sitting in an embassy in London. He's not a U.S. citizen.
Well, that's kind of an ongoing discussion, isn't it? Are U.S. citizens the only people who have rights under the Constitution of the United States? Ask someone like Mike Pompeo, and I'm sure the answer is yes. So a non-citizen can, under that theory of law, a non-citizen can just be locked up for any reason or no reason and doesn't even have recourse to habeas corpus. This is not the time to be explaining habeas corpus. But, of course, that argument is negated by the fact that we still have people in, we still have prisoners in our concentration camp at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. And the reason we took them to Guantanamo Bay was because it was not within the territorial United States, and therefore the thinking among the loyal Bushies back then was that the concentration camp prisoners would not be subject to claims of habeas corpus. That is not entirely settled. So this might be worth paying attention to.
Meanwhile, a lawyer for Julian Assange seems to think that that he is owed something. He said, we've had no communication with the Department of Justice, and they've not indicated to me that they have brought any charges against Mr. Assange. They've been unwilling to have any discussion at all, despite our repeated request that they let us know what Mr. Assange's status is in any pending investigations. There was no reason why WikiLeaks should be treated differently from any other publisher. Now, truthfully speaking, WikiLeaks is not a publisher. That becomes kind of manifestly res ipsa loquitur obvious in their name. They're not a publisher, they're a leaker. And the two are somewhat different. So this story bears watching. Because if this administration, this regime, sorry, Gene, if this regime starts using the Department of Justice to pursue its own personal vendettas, everybody who enjoys something resembling free speech is in trouble. Now, I'm not screaming, I'm not carrying on, I'm not hollering, I'm not shrieking. This is too important to do any of that about. But it is gravely important that this not happen. And as I said, the fact that it is with regard to a group that is not particularly popular makes it more dangerous, because popular opinion won't be with them. And that is, in fact, worrisome. Because the United States government back in the First World War didn't use the Espionage Act to go after popular groups or popular people. They went after people who were deemed to be sufficiently powerless to prevent the actions taken against them. Socialists, communists, pacifists, religious sects. I mean, you know that Mennonites and Amish were imprisoned at Leavenworth during the First World War for refusing to participate in that bloody misadventure. That's true. And left-leaning trade organizations were crushed like bugs. And untrammeled power like this, left unchecked, could radically change the nature of what freedoms we yet have remaining. So just be aware. Be aware of that this is out there. And don't be surprised when you find out that some pet grand jury in D.C. Has issued an indictment against poor Julian or against WikiLeaks as an organization? Because this is the kind of authoritarian regime that does that sort of thing. This is a president who makes congratulatory calls to brutal dictators like Recep Erdogan in Turkey and Duterte in the Philippines, whose police forces are presently on a Murder Incorporated rampage. It's going to get, it's a long way. It's a long way to November 2018, and it's a long way to January the 20th, 2021. And when we talk about the resistance, this is what we're talking about. We have to resist even when the subjects are people with whom we are less than sympathetic. Because it's that old, first they came for the trade unionists, and I said nothing because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the communists, and I said nothing because I was not a communist. And then they came for me, and there was nobody to say anything because everybody was all gone. Because that really is where this country is. Fascism isn't coming, fascism is here. And it is going to become more and more apparent as time goes by that, in fact, it is. And we few, we happy few, are the ones who will have to defend against it. And it may come at a cost, especially if Jefferson Davis Beauregard Secessions III gets his way. The Washington Post said prosecutors in recent weeks have been drafting a memo that contemplates charges against members of the WikiLeaks organization, possibly including conspiracy, theft of government property, or violating the Espionage Act. See, there it is, the Espionage Act. Among other things, and this, you know, this is one of those hard cases, make bad law examples. It's one thing to publish documents. It is another thing to publish tools. And of course, it was last month when, in fact, WikiLeaks did another of their unedited, unexpurgated dumps that revealed the whole business about the CIA and cell phones and encryption. That's not so much publishing information as the intellectual line between information and something like code and software. Well, that's the sort of thing that courts and the lawyers arguing in them get all worked up about. And that makes those hard cases. That makes the bad law. So it remains to be seen, but of all the things that this regime has attempted to perpetrate thus far, in many ways, this is quite possibly the most disturbing, because this is a direct assault on the very nature, the core of the First Amendment itself. Can you imagine, for even a moment, now this is an assault on the First Amendment, can you imagine for even a moment the hue and cry that would attend a similar attack on the holy, sacred Second Amendment? The NRA would have 100,000 people in front of the White House and the Department of Justice with pitchforks and torches. And that's what makes this dangerous. Because there's a whole bunch of people in this country who, as long as some mumbling authoritarian says something about keeping America safe, will gladly give up somebody else's rights and keep giving them up, you know, until there are no rights left to give. It's the end of Shel Silverstein's The Smokeout. Nothing left to roll, screams Pearl. Right. And in that moment, the inastute, the inattentive, the uneducated will be heard to cry, "What happened?" And the only thing we'll be able to say to them is, "You happened. You voted for him." But at first, it'll only be people they don't like and that are easily disliked. People who are weak. Consider, for instance, the case of Sahar Nowruzadeh. Among other things, she's one of the co-designers of the nuclear deal, the multilateral, multi-nation agreement with Iran. And she's with the State Department. And she has worked closely with the Secretary of State's policy arm in regard to matters touching upon Iran and other nations in that area. Yes, Isaac, I realize that. Isaac just sent me a message on Twitter. November 29, 2010, Holder says WikiLeaks under criminal investigation. And then the administration elected not to pursue it. Because it opened a Pandora's box of nightmares. This bunch, however, it's not going to be the same. So I'm sorry, I'm not going to swallow some false equivalency between an administration that made a positive decision not to prosecute and a regime that has said that the press has too much freedom. But anyway, Sahar Nowruzadeh, well, she's not in the job she was in anymore. Now, granted, she might sound foreign to somebody in, say, Bug Tussle. But guess what? She is a straight-up, no-kidding, American citizen. She was born right here in the new United States of America. Her parents are of Iranian heritage. I kind of guessed at that from the name. She first entered government service during the Reign of Error. It was 2005 when she was hired into the Dim Leader administration. But, and here we go, she has been the victim lately of smears from that website that rhymes with light and fart. Staffer who helped broker Iran nuclear deal still working at Trump State Department. And this is a problem. Why? But because she is an American citizen of I guess non-white. I mean, really? Those are your Aryans over there, okay? I mean, those are Persians, you know, white folks. But not white enough. Descent. She gone. She's been demoted. After a series of smears and a witch hunt perpetrated by the neo-Nazi rag that up until recently was run by racist Bannon, who now whispers sweet nothings, oh, there's somethings, into the ear of Geezer Disgustus. See how it works? She was supposed to be in her position for a year, but once the smears started showing up at Conservative Review and that website that rhymes with light and fart, boom! They deassigned her and reassigned her and demoted her into the Office of Iranian Affairs. Speaking to Politico, the State Department would not say anything about what her new duties would be. I'm sure her new duties are to sit at an empty desk and watch a phone that never rings and check for emails that never arrive. This is what it looks like when fascists get their hands on government. And this also comes at the same time that, I don't know if you caught his press conference with the Italian premier yesterday, but he took a question from, John King maybe or somebody, and took a moment to say, we've got a lot of bad deals. We've been involved in a lot of bad deals, horrible deals, horrible, very horrible, terrible, bad deals. But none are more very horribler than the one with Iran. And everybody knows Iran is cheating. And I don't know why it was negotiated. Well, you know, remember, the agreement was reached so as to provide a means to delay Iran's arrival at the full ability to create a nuclear weapon. Because, after all, only Israel can have nuclear weapons over there. Well, Israel and Pakistan. Well, okay, Israel and Pakistan and India. Okay, well, Israel and Pakistan and India, and, you know, this the royal, serene, noble, high graciousness kingdom of Saudi Arabia sort of has him by proxy because, you know, if his serene, royal, noble, majestic graciousness says so, we'll think about nuking somebody for him, preferably Iran. But there he was yesterday, prattling with, it's a terrible deal, we got to find a way to get out of it. When it looks pretty much like, well, the agreement is working. And if the United States got out of the agreement, whatever it would take to do that, that would still leave about 11 nations party to it. Which I suspect is why it was... why it was put together that way. Yeah. So we've, I think that at least sets the table. For what's coming up as we get Friday on the Front Porch underway. We'll see. A reminder, if you've never participated in Friday on the Front Porch, then by all means, if you would like to, send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, one word, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunk. And in short order, Sparky will lead you into the group and make you comfortable and welcome. And I think you'll have a darn fine old time. One last thing.
Yeah, just one last thing, sir.
One last thing. Since we were talking about Jefferson Davis Beauregard secession of the flood, did you catch this business of... Now, this is the Attorney General of the United States. This is the number one lawyer in the government of the United States of America. And some of these things you just read and you go, what, Edith, huh? Well, Jefferson Davis Beauregard Secessions III is upset that judges are out there doing the duties with which they are charged under Article 3 of the Constitution of the United States. And so it was that a couple of days ago, our racist Attorney General, our Attorney Klegel, went on the radio program hosted by that man who has the voice made for print, named Mark Levin. Not Mark Levine. Mark Levine is a different person. He's a nice guy. Mark Levin, who is a right-wing asshat. And appearing on the Mark Levin radio show, Sessions said of the latest incarnation of Marcus Aurelius's Muslim ban, "I really am amazed that a judge sitting on an island in the Pacific can issue an order that stops the president of the new United States from what appears to be clearly his statutory and constitutional power." He was speaking of U.S. District Judge Derek Watson, a native of Hawaii, the state of Hawaii, otherwise known as the state of Hawaii, not an island in the Pacific. Well, he's down there in the Carolinas or maybe over in the Marshalls. Hey, he could be picking up old shell casings on Midway. Who knows? He could be on that Bikini Atoll looking for women in bikinis. He's probably perverted that way. But U.S. District Judge Derek Watson, a native of Hawaii, the state, and of Oahu, the island, issued a nationwide stay on Comrade Kumquat's Muslim ban. And apparently, Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions would don't much cotton to that. See what I did there? Sessions, secessions, cotton, high. Tough crowd. Ever since he issued his ruling, by the way, Judge Watson has been the recipient of threats from various and sundry Trumpanzees. Derek Watson. Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, notes, "That there Pacific Islander ain't no white guy. Not with that name." Wait, no. Yeah. And then, so, because this is what makes it fun. I can't wait until somebody indicts Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions for all that footsie he played with Ambassador Kislyak and the lies and so forth and espionage that he engaged in. Well, Senator Brian Schatz of Hawaii said, "Mr. Attorney General, you voted for that judge." Because he did. He voted to confirm him. "And that island is called Oahu. It's my home. Have some respect." And then the other senator from Hawaii, Senator Mazie Hirono, said, "Hey, Jeff Sessions, this island in the Pacific has been the 50th state for going on 58 years, and we won't succumb to your dog whistle politics." Some island in the Pacific, huh? Probably got people on it that ain't anywhere near white. So now, in the last 24 hours or so, Attorney Klegel General, Cyclops, Jefferson Davis Beauregard Secessions III, has tried to wiggle out of this via a DOJ spokescreep who said, "Well, Hawaii is, in fact, an island in the Pacific, a beautiful one, where the Attorney General's granddaughter was born." That's DOJ spokescreep Ian D. Pryor speaking to CNN. And Ian D. Pryor continued and said, "The point, however, is that there is a problem when a flawed opinion by a single judge can block the president's lawful exercise of authority to keep the entire country safe."
And even then, these cops screw up. Because, yes, Hawaii is an island in the Pacific. In fact, I'm told that the locals there refer to it as the Big Island because it is the largest island in the Hawaiian island chain. Here's the problem. They got it wrong again, because the island in the Pacific where Derek Watson is on is not Hawaii. Hawaii is the state. Derek Watson is on, you know, Oahu, where Honolulu, the state capital, is. This irritated Chelsea Clinton. Chelsea Clinton, daughter of the devil! Oh, Jesus! Clinton dynasty! She'll want to be president, too! Oh, God!
Chelsea Clinton said, throw in a little bit of shade, Someone please tell Sessions that Hawaii is a state. An American in Hawaii is as American as one from Alabama.
Or Indiana.
The Indiana was the shade part, because that referred to Judge Curiel. The judge that the Clementine Caligula attacked for not rubber stamping the massive fraud that was Trump University. And Judge Curiel also, by the way, curiously, has jurisdiction over a case regarding deportations.
Trump and the poor old spirochetes that are running out of brains. May find it some tough sledding with Judge Watson. I haven't checked in the last few hours, but again, Senator Hirono spoke up. Senator Schatz spoke up. You know who I would have expected to speak up? Tulsi Gabbard. But last I checked her Twitter feed, she was silent as a graven image. Then again, she went and kissed the ring up in Trump Tower, so maybe she doesn't want to, you know, offend a friend. You will. All right, so we're four past the hour. And hopefully, we've got a rollicking, rousing Friday on the Front Porch on the way. As noted, we've got $340 in fundraising to do this evening, so that I won't be down in a $540 fundraising hole on Morin Monday. There's a $10 challenge on the table, courtesy of Steve in New York, as yet unresponded to. Oh, thank you. Steve also awarded a cowbell. for my reference to a walking bleach blonde turd. Okay, I didn't think it was that great, but if you did. Note coming from Sylvia, subject line Moab. After your exposition on Moab the other day, it turns up again in the name for a newly minted dinosaur species from Utah. Well, blame that one on the Mormons, Sylvia, because they named that area of Utah Moab. And for all I know, it shows up in the Book of Mormon somewhere. Under the subject line, erosion of rights, Stephen Vermont says, with Trump and the Republicans, it's all about culling the herd. I know. The thing is, we're the ones getting culled. Oh, Chelsea Clinton made the comparison between Hawaii and Alabama. Steve making an observation. The big thing Hawaii didn't do? Commit treason and take up arms against the United States. Oh, well, thank you. On his birthday, Steve from Georgistan says, I'll get that $10 challenge, Bob. Us members of the fraternity of Steve got to stick together. Well, thank you. That's a very hobbit thing to do, Steve from Georgistan, giving things away on your birthday instead of accepting them. I didn't realize that. Stockton Larry in the chat room pointing out today's funnest fact of all the 50 states, Hawaii is the southernmost. Oh, yeah, I remember Bloom County, too. Randy in PA. Mr. Spock, the captain is being attacked by a platinum-furred tonsil sucker. All right, break time. Let's fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Let's have fun. Let's end the week on an up note, shall we? This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
I can't sleep 'cause my
Song never gets old. Talking Heads, Psycho Killer. 11 minutes past the hour on this Friday on the front porch. Hey, before I run over and we get to... there's no running. I sit right here. But before we go to the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, a quick request, if I could, please. And that is this. If any of you are going to the People's Climate March, and I'm just putting this out there a week in advance, maybe plan on sending in an email report of what you saw, that would be really cool. I'd love to be there, but I don't think I'd march very far. My blood sugar would probably go down into my shoes, and I'd just be sitting there kind of, what? But at any rate, if you're going to the People's Climate March, just maybe think about updating us and letting us know how awesome it was. And so, yes, indeed, true to their word, Steve and Steve, members of the Fraternity of Steve, have taken us down to $320 to go. That's, 32 more people at $10 a piece, and we got this licked. So we'll see how it plays out. Now, onward, over to the Horn Molloy Skype chat group, capably moderated for lo these many years by none other than Sparky. Hey, Sparky.
Hey, Bob. Can you hear me?
You sound awesome.
Great. The day started out bad for me. The other computer that was in the man cave here crashed.
Oh, no.
And it goes to like a window that shows all the systems and all this stuff, and I can't get out of it and to get it to start, so I just
Got
in the house, brought the other one out here.
Sounds like there may be some expertise called for.
Well, it was having trouble uploading some updates for the last couple of days for some reason.
Is this the newer one or the older one?
The older one.
The
32-bit.
That's running which operating system?
Windows 10.
Oh, okay. I don't know. Good luck. Granted, we're talking about a visual on the radio, but still, I have to give you props for your C-clamp avatar.
Oh, you noticed?
Yeah, for your C-clamp avatar photo.
I had a brain fart when you said that, because I can turn around and look at the layout table, and there's an 8-inch and a 10-inch C-clamp hanging there from the welding days. And so I thought about it, and I knew there was a space that my dad had carved.
So is that wood or?
No, it's a gourd.
Well, that fits. I think gourd head would probably, just ask Dan Snyder. I'm sure he'll agree, gourd head.
Yeah, my brother-in-law used to grow the gourds for my dad, and he carved them and made bowls out of them and all kinds of stuff.
That's neat.
But anyway, as far as the mouse going, it's five baby rats and one electrocuted laundry room mouse, and that's where I stand. But there's one trap that I've had over here, just a regular mouse trap, and something's been eating the peanut butter off of it the last two nights and hadn't set it off.
Oh, we've got a smart one.
So I moved the electronic rat trap over to this location, and hopefully I'll get it loaded her up with peanut butter, and hopefully I'll get them tonight.
Yeah, because the current will travel through. But I mean, peanut butter is a conductor, isn't it? You are, after all, an electrician.
Well, it's on the back plate that they touch that sets off the damn thing. There's a plate on the floor, and then the back plate is metal. And you put the peanut butter on so it hangs on there, and then when they touch that plate, it's all over.
Well, if you catch the wafting aroma of smoked peanut butter. You'll know.
Well, let's move around the room a little bit. There's Tracy. Hey, Tracy.
Hey, Bob. How the hell are you?
I'm so doggone good. I don't know. I've forgotten how good this feels.
Is that do I hear a hint of sarcasm?
No, actually, I'm nothing's hurting right now, and I don't quite know how to feel about it.
Yeah, I went to my rheumatologist today because went to the MRI came back. There's one of those things. There's something wrong, but they're not quite sure what it is. So I took the paperwork to my rheumatologist. Rheumatologist is like, okay, do you want a shot of another shot of steroids? I'm like, not really doing any good. So my doc, he gave me the animal pack of the super duper pack of prednisone. So I'm taking that.
Oh, the Predi pack. Well, there's still steroids, but yeah.
Yeah, but you know, the shot wasn't really doing any good. So I got the max pack of the prednisone. So I'm on that. Have an appointment next week with the neurosurgeon that cracked my skull open, because my regular doc thinks that there might be another flare up of the, but I had brain surgery 5 years ago.
The Chiari thing?
Yeah, the Chiari thing.
I thought once you fixed that, it stayed fixed.
No, it was, when I went into it, 5 years ago, they said it's not a cure. It could help it, but it was not going to be a catch-all. So I go next Friday to see what he says about my MRI, and we get to go from there. So I'm not going to let them crack. One thing for sure, I'm not going to let them crack my skull open again. That's not going to happen, because whatever it is, it's not life. I mean, aside from being life threatening, it is not. It's not a tumor or anything.
It's not a tumor.
So it's not.
Is it lupus? No, I'm sorry. I always remember George Costanza.
Right. It's one of those things, when they don't know what's wrong with you, it's lupus. So it's not that. So in the meantime, I'm just, what's happening? In the meantime, it's just me and homework, reading a really interesting book on, actually two books, Voices of a Black Nation, is basically newspaper articles from the Harlem Renaissance about different newspapers about Black political thought, and then actually another book on African American political thought of different newspaper articles from Booker T. Washington, W.B. Du Bois, Garvey, and Randolph. All the things you have to do when you go back to school. So other than that, I'm cool, and I'm glad you're not hurting. So what about your NLEs?
I had a couple of little containers of some really freaking awesome yogurt earlier today. Had a little cottage cheese.
I had some hummus and some really kick-ass tabbouleh today. Some fresh.
I love me some tabbouleh. The only thing I don't like is the baba ganoush.
You and me both. I don't. It's just smashed. It's the poor excuse for hummus.
It's nasty.
It's this nasty smashed eggplant. I'm sorry. I don't
kind of slimy.
It's the slimy. It's so funny. It's actually right when I was at the deli counter at this Armenian market, I had ordered my tabbouleh and my hummus. And then this lady right behind me ordered her tabbouleh and her baba ganoush. And the first thing that popped into my head was you saying, not a fan of the baba ganoush. And I'm like, and I want to tell her, I'm like, ew, really? But I mean,
Tracy, don't start shit at the Armenian deli, okay?
I can't start shit. I'm a stranger in a foreign land. I can't start shit.
And so, but you got to tell me at the Armenian deli, do they do the wraps with like the paper, the thin, super thin flatbread where they wrap the meats and the cheeses up? The original, call? What are those called? Hovans or lavash or
lavash?
Yeah. Yes. Oh man. I love those things. Jesus, we're 21 minutes into Friday on the Front Porch, and we're already into the food porn, Tracy.
Already into the food porn. As a matter of fact, we got some stuff that we got some shish. So we got some shish kebab for the weekend. So we're going to do, chicken thigh meat and some really nice lamb. And not a fan of the lamb, but Jan is. So we got some nice marinated lamb and stuff like that. So we're going to be doing that. But we're all, you know, this is one of those things that's great when you live in L.A. because L.A. and food and all the things that you can get that, you know, when I think about these assholes that are trying to keep, you know, immigrants from out of this country. And I'm like, really? American food is just that great. If it wasn't for immigrants, what would we be eating, Bob? Seriously.
New England boiled dinners.
Right. Really?
No. Seriously. You can go and learn about the white European diet in 1491. It's mm-hmm. nothing you really want to eat.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I went to England, and I tasted that food.
It's onions and turnips.
Right. I tasted that food, Bob. I went to England. You know, the food wasn't good until I went to the ethnic neighborhoods, okay? It's like, you know, when I went to the black neighborhoods and the Indian neighborhoods and the African neighborhoods, that's when the food got kicking. But when I was in the good old white neighborhoods,
boring.
Not so hot. Boring. So when they
Tracy, to be fair, the Colombian exchange, the whole world benefited from it. Granted,
right.
the indigenous Americans got a, you know, here, you get a genocide, the rest of us get a cuisine. try to imagine, oh, I don't know. try to imagine Thai, Vietnamese, Indian food without chili peppers. I mean,
without chili peppers.
They had more spices than anybody else in the world prior to 1491. So, you know, there was a lot more flavor there, but no chili peppers. Try to imagine Chinese Szechuan cooking.
Right.
No chili peppers. Granted, they got those hellacious peppercorns, but still, no chili peppers.
No chili peppers.
Italian food without the tomato. Germans, right. We're moving into the realm of stereotypes, but Germans and Irish with no potatoes.
Okay. Yes. So it's, come on, you know, it's like if it wasn't for, you know, people that weren't, you know, pale or melanin, you know, the people that had no melanin. It's like, you know, us people with color brought flavor. I mean, just look what the slaves did to food. Okay, we got
someday, I'm going back in September because it's only one day a year, and you know, you really ought to, Tracy. This is something you and Jan should plan for.
Uh oh, sounds like something that would make me.
And if Angry's listening, he'll go, yeah, mm-hmm. But one day in September of every year, a barrier island in the low country off of Brunswick, Georgia. I've talked about this in the past. Called Sapelo Island is opened up to visitors. And it's the Sapelo Island homecoming. And people, because there is still a community there, and people from all over the country, black people, who have spread all over the country, come home to Sapelo Island. And you got to take a boat to get there. But white folks are welcome too. And they've got all kinds of food stalls there.
Oh.
I mean, the whole freshly caught fish. Just, you know, clean them, scrape them, you know, roll them in the cornmeal and into the hot fish grease.
Out of the fish grease.
You betcha. Chitlins?
I haven't had chitlins.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
You know you can't eat everybody's chitlins. And I haven't had chitlins since my grandmother died in 1996 because everybody don't clean chitlins right.
Yeah, they do on Sapelo Island.
Well, of course.
And there's music and Oh.
Is it the 1 week in September?
It's one day. It's like one Saturday in September.
Is this like off of, you know, like, or are we talking like off of Savannah, Georgia, like in there? Or
south of
like
there.
That? Okay. Well, you know, because I typically, you know, I haven't made a sojourn down to Georgia for a while to visit my brother and his family, because, you know, Georgia.
What are chitlins?
Pig guts.
Pig innards.
I thought so.
And you got to rinse
them.
You rinse them and you clean them real good, and you deep fry them. And when they're done right, Lord God, they are good.
You know what? I have never had them fried. I've never had chitlins fried. I've had chitlins with the hog maw. So however my grandmother cooked them, but I've never had them fried. So now I'm curious as to how fried chitlins taste.
Well, these
now
are...
you got me curious, Bob.
These were righteous.
Now you got me curious. Now see, Jan won't fuck with that. She'll eat it. You know, from the rooter to the tooter. I don't know if I could get her. I don't think I could get her down with the chitlins. Now she will fuck up some bacon and some ham. But I don't know if I could get her with the. I've had pig's feet, I've had chitlins, I've even had pigtails, and all that. But I don't think I can get her to do that. I don't think I could get her with the chitlins. I think she would. I think that would be a hard no on that.
Now, see, we're moving into some esoteric territory here, because I just got a note from Ron and Raleigh. And I can't answer this question because I've never cooked them. I've only eaten them cooked by other people.
Yes, see, I've never cooked them either, like I said.
Because Ron and Raleigh wants to know, do you prefer your chitlins stomped, stomp whooped, or crick slung?
To who? Oh, God. See, I I've never cooked them, so I wouldn't know.
Right. I ask no questions. I merely eat. And you know, there's shrimp and there's crabs and and Lamar just messaged me and says, black eyed peas, please. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're there.
Mm-hmm.
Gumbo, yeah, gumbos. And yeah. Because what we're talking about is
black eyed peas and gumbo.
But what we're talking about is Gullah Geechee cooking.
Yes.
And
what is the island? What do they call it?
Low country,
yes.
And there's red rice and yellow rice and holy, oh my, yeah. Special.
Yeah, when I went to, Jan and I went to Charleston, South Carolina. We did the whole, yeah, we fell in love with that part of the country, and Savannah, Georgia, with the low country cooking. And I was just like, you know, I brought home the red rice and the yellow rice and all that. So it was, and see, the problem with me and my, you know, the only part of the country that I know for a fact that my family is from is Shreveport, Louisiana, Jefferson City, Missouri, and Pine Bluff, Arkansas.
Had to get there from somewhere.
You know, but I don't know if there's other parts of the country that we're from, like, you know, because... Since, you know, black folks left, you know, the South because not so much because of anything other than running for their lives and to get away from white people and the Great Migration and to go somewhere where there might be some respect. Nobody in my family talked about our past. So I have no idea. And by the time I realized, you know, when I was old enough to ask questions about our past, everybody was dead. And my mother doesn't know anything. And, you know, so there's no one to ask at this point. So I have no idea about my great-great-grandmother or anybody else. So, you know, how sad that is that I don't know if any of my family came from, you know, Georgia or South Carolina, North Carolina, or any of these other places. I just know how I cook. And what I've observed from cooking for my grandmother. And like I said, none of this stuff I know, this is by osmosis. You know what I'm saying? Just by watching. And I don't know where she learned it from, because I don't know. I never knew what questions to ask her. How sad is, and when I listen to, you know, people like you, when you talk about your family, I'm so jealous because you have a history. I don't have a history. My history basically stops at my mom and my dad. And even still, even for my dad, I don't even know anything about my grandparents. That's so ridiculous that I don't even
but
know
you know
anything
what?
About my family.
You can, it's amazing what you can find out on the internet now.
True.
I mean, what I know, my grandmother found out.
But I don't get those stories.
She found out and did it the hard way. You know, taking rubbings of gravestones that you couldn't read anymore and that kind of stuff. Now you can fill in all kinds of blanks. But yeah, right. It's about the stories.
But it's about the stories, the oral history that I will never hear, and that's wrong. You know?
Well, Tracy, let's back up a minute. If you ever go back to Charleston, make sure to eat at Pugan's Porch. That's where all the locals eat. I want to post a link here. And you'll never want to go anywhere else to eat again if you're ever in that area.
Yeah, I think Janet and I, not this year because we're going on a cruise this year, but definitely next year.
Put
I want
that
to
on.
Where did you put it in on?
It's in the chat room, and I put it in the Skype room, too.
Okay.
It's one of the best restaurants I've ever eaten. Allegedly, it's haunted by a school teacher, blah, blah, blah. But who cares about that? The food will just, you know, you'll just be itching to go back again. And I'm sorry to interrupt you. And
that's okay.
It's food. It's food. Yeah. When it comes to food,
by the way, we got a message from Asa here. Brother Deacon Asa, you know, for a guy who ain't able to eat at the moment, you're pretty fast and loose with the food porn hashtag, I'm starving. To which I responded, suffer, Asa, suffer.
why is Asa having issues with food?
No. He's in your time zone, and it ain't supper time yet, and he's hungry.
Where does Asa live?
Ace is up in BC.
I never knew where Ace lived. I didn't know he lived in British Columbia.
Oh, and I got to throw this in there, coming from Steve in New York. Let me just say that this conversation beats the hell out of talking about Pontifex Minimus.
Yeah, I'd rather not talk about him.
And for Pontifex Minimus, okay, just
yeah, that's pretty. That's pretty awesome. That's pretty awesome.
But we need to check in with Steve from Georgistan because it is, after all, his birthday.
Oh, my goodness. Do we get to sing happy birthday to him?
No, because we get sued.
1, 2, 3. Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday.
Nobody else is going to sing with me.
No, because we're going to let you get sued by yourself.
Well,
no,
there's no longer a copyright to that
there's
song.
There's no longer a copyright issue on that song.
Public domain. The copyright was invalidated.
Damn it.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'll accept for He's a Jolly Good Fellow. You know, that's cool.
Well, he's a jolly good fellow.
That's why the Flintstones used to always sing that instead of happy birthday, because you're right. It was copyrighted up until about a year ago, I guess.
About a year ago.
Yep.
That's why when you go to restaurants, they couldn't sing happy birthday in the restaurants.
Yep.
So, I'll tell you what, I want a refund for all those times I had to pay the damn royalty for singing happy birthday, you know? I'm going to sue them. No.
Oh, geez.
Oh, my goodness.
What's up, Steve?
Not too much. Doing good, Rick. How are you, buddy?
I am doing fine. I've got my Cubs t-shirt on. I've got my championship replica Chris Bryant shirt on, with the gold letters in the back, you know, and his name in gold, and getting ready to go to a Chicago sports bar called Rush Street. I have actually got a date, so I'm looking forward to it.
Ooh.
Nice.
Ooh la.
Yeah.
La.
She's actually a Cubs fan, and she attended graduated from the University of Iowa and moved out here around September 11th because she was engaged, and that kind of went south.
Been trolling the Alumni Association again, haven't you?
No. It was totally, coincidental. Total serendipity, Bob.
Sure. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. She's just one of the plenty of fishes out there, you know?
Well, okay, so you just got hate mail from Marty. Death to Cubs fans. So,
uh-oh. Here you go.
Marty's Giants fan, you see.
Oh, I thought maybe it was an Indian fan. Okay, well, we did stomp over the Giants, actually. That epic comeback in the ninth inning, game six, to win it 4-2. Yeah.
She's not the one that flashed the Cubs?
Yeah. Yeah, actually, the Cubs are on, and so are the Bulls. The Bulls are playing. The Cubs just started.
Jesus, did you see the Celtics mail it in the other night?
We're talking about sports, so I'll just be reading until you guys start talking about sports.
Oh, for
how about them Warriors?
God.
No, I forget what the guy's name is, but he was going back down court after a missed shot. And I guess somebody, you know, he got donkey ears, and somebody in the crowd was riding him, and so he's loping down the court and flips off some fan.
Oh, geez.
And meanwhile, the entire game passed him by, score, you know.
Wow. Well, that's usually bad. That's bad for the PR, you know, flipping off your fans or jumping into the crowd and, you know, starting to fight with them like Ron Artest did with the Indiana Pacers.
I remember that. Yep.
Yeah, he was like suspended for I don't know how many games, like 2 weeks or something. Ten games.
The Braves look like they might have a team this year.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, they got a pitcher that would make me and you look puny, Bob. I've never seen such a fat pitcher in my life. I mean, he's
nah,
bigger.
No
than
fat,
pal,
no fat, no fat shaming, Steve.
Well, you've lost 50 pounds, so let me just.
I'm down to 218 pounds. By God!
Wow!
Oh,
wow!
Good job! Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking about. I mean, seeing as how Cosmo
diet.
Seeing as how Cosmopolitan published that article about how. A woman lost 50 pounds without even exercising, and it turned out she had fucking cancer and was laid up in a hospital bed for a few months. I'm thinking maybe I'll pitch this to Esquire.
Wait a minute.
Beats what the tape, I guess. The Bob
Doc. The hillbilly yogurt diet, or what, Bob?
It's about the size
of it.
The
hillbilly yogurt diet?
But yes, Tracy, they did.
That's some bullshit. Really? She had cancer. And she lost 50 pounds without even trying. Stupid cunts.
Sound like the tapeworm diet, you know?
Oh, God.
It's a thing. Google it. I mean, people are so desperate to lose weight. Now they're just shortcutting it. You just go get surgery and boom, drop 50 pounds in a day. It's all over.
Well, you know, I had a buddy many years ago who did a lawyer, and he did a lot of divorces. And he wanted to put an ad in the Yellow Pages that said, lose 250 pounds of ugly fat. I do divorces.
Oh, that's good.
That's awesome.
He didn't.
The bar took a dim view.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, no sense of humor, I tell you.
Yeah, what the hell.
Yeah.
But everybody in Georgia in the 6th District is running around over this Ossoff thing. I don't know if anybody's paying attention to that Karen Handel.
Oh.
And she, he just beat her by 3 points. And now the latest thing is the Republicans.
Wait. He beat her by
30 points.
30 points.
3 times 10.
Okay. 30. All right. Yeah, okay. I apologize. It's my birthday. I get a pass, right?
Right, yes.
But they are so desperate that the Georgia Republicans are trying to suppress the vote. I'll just post a link. It makes it a lot easier to understand. Basically, what they're saying is if you didn't register before March 20th, you can't go ahead and register now, which
has
never
serious?
Been the way. Yeah. That's the only way they can win, Tracy, is to suppress the vote.
Mm.
And I don't know why this seat this seems so golden to them. I mean, it's only for what, a half a term?
No, it's the better part of a term. June. It's 11 months. It's a year and 5 months. because
it's got symbolic value.
That's exactly what it is because it's been a Republican seat since Newt Gingrich had it.
Sixth district. And could it be because they're afraid it's going to set a precedent or a bellwether?
Exactly.
And then, you know, Johnny Isaacson also had the seat in between Gingrich and Price. So
right. And he almost got his ass handed to him, and that's why they had to redraw the district.
Wow.
So they added a little gerrymandering into it as well.
Just for flavor. Oh, by the way, Tracy, we've got a clarification from Ron in Raleigh.
Oh, okay.
He said, I fat fingered my query. In regard to the chitlins, I meant to type stump whooped. This is where you clean your chitlins by whooping them on a handy stump to remove the unwanted materials. Crick slung, you clean your chitlins by slinging them repeatedly in a fast running crick. And I think I would favor, under those circumstances, I'd be into crick slung.
Yeah, quick crick slung would be, I would favor that too. I would want some water into that thing right there.
Yep.
No,
but he closes, Ron and Raleigh closes by saying, chitlins, potato salad, a mess of collards with chow chow relish will make a jackrabbit slap a bear.
Yes. Yes, it would. But like I said, I haven't had chitlins since 95. So it's been over 20-some-odd years since I've had chitlins. Seriously.
And for the uninitiated, if you go looking for them like we're pronouncing them in the grocery store, you will not find them.
You will not find them.
They will be frozen. They will be frozen. They will be in a white bucket. And it will say chitterlings.
Chitterlings. Not chitlins.
Because...
And you would only find them in an ethnic market.
Oh, no.
Or in my neighborhood. You won't find
They're in my Walmart and they're in my Kroger's, especially around holidays.
They're in my Kroger.
Where do you live? What part of the country do you live in?
Oh, stop it.
Where do you live, Bob? Jules, where do you live?
Appalachia.
I live in Indiana.
Okay.
I live in Northeast Indiana, so...
They will not be in Encino. They will not be in Encino. I promise you that. I was lucky to find Punk IT.
Yeah, because
won't be in Encino.
You can't get full-fat buttermilk there either, can you?
No. I get low-fat buttermilk in Encino, so there. So I have to go to the
goddamn California food Maoists.
Thank you, damn purists. Forget it. I have to if I want certain things. I remember when I was growing up and we moved from South Central to West LA, you know, Beverly Hills adjacent. If I want my stepfather, we used, you know, if you want biscuits, if you want to sop up some stuff with some biscuits, if you want a Brer Rabbit syrup, better known as, you know, molasses.
Molasses.
You could not get that in the neighborhood market. The only thing they had was, you know, Mrs. Butterworth's and Log Cabin.
Ew.
You could not get that shit. You could not get molasses or anything like that close to that. If you wanted Brer Rabbit syrup, we had to go to ABC Market in the hood to get that stuff. So like I said, not going to be getting chitterlings. Besides the fact that this is a, you know, no. If I wanted chitlins, I have to go to South Central to get me some chitlins, cooked or in the store otherwise. No.
Whose leg do you got to hump to get some scrapple or head cheese around here, you know?
Yeah, well, see, and I have hog head cheese. Yeah.
Yes.
Not going to find that news.
Not going there, huh?
South.
Yeah. Same thing.
You can take head cheese and you can take souse and you can put it on a little tiny slice on a big white plate and serve it in a Tony restaurant in L.A., charge $100 a plate for it and call it pate.
Right. Absolutely.
You have to say that with your teeth clenched. Pate. Darling,
and your fingers clenched at the same time.
Darling, would you like some country pate?
No, it's hog head cheese, motherfucker.
Isn't that where they force feed ducks or something to the point where their livers explode?
No, that's foie gras, and they don't explode.
Okay.
And I refuse to get all PETA about goddamn geese.
They are mean sons of bitches, man. You ever had one pinch you?
No, but I've had foie gras, and it's freaking delicious.
It's some yummy ass shit.
Hey, Bob.
Yes, it is.
Yes, Sparky.
Here's an news headline you won't hear about in West Virginia. Taco truck robbed at gunpoint. Suspect sought.
They're robbing the taco trucks now.
Yeah, that about floored me. It's a town just south of me. Corning, California.
They do, you know, those food trucks do a booming business. That's like become, you know, the latest craze, at least in L.A. I know. You know, food trucks.
Well, Rick, there's food trucks and then there's taco trucks.
Well, okay, that's true.
there is a difference. There's a definite difference between a food truck and a taco truck.
When I first moved out to California like over 30 years ago, you know, you
and
didn't
you're
want
old.
To, you know, yeah, I know I am. I mean, you never want to order from those trucks because we called them roach coaches.
Roach coaches, yeah.
You know, but you know they've gotten much more upscale. You know,
yeah. I mean, where else can you get a lobster roll?
Their workers' lunch place.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
No, there's a taco truck on Sunset and the Hyperion or something that probably makes one of the best burritos. It's like the size is probably about, it weighs probably about 2 pounds and it has everything in it.
Oh, it's a burrito baby.
Yeah, it's a burrito baby. And it only costs $7. And
Wowzer.
If I think about it, if I went to a restaurant to have that burrito, it would be a $20 burrito. And it's the most amazing thing. And I can't eat those things anymore because Weight Watchers. But, oh, just thinking about it, this makes me happy.
It's just dirty, isn't it? Yeah. See, we've started a thing. Marty wrote in and said, with regard to you having to go to South Central, Marty said, good reason to stay away from South Central. Ron and Raleigh, on the other hand, says, tell Tracy to take a trip to Compton. Brer Rabbit has too much sulfur for me. I prefer Grandma's. You're both wrong. You're both wrong. What you do?
Hey, folks.
You go to
stop telling us how to eat. Come on.
You go
Bob.
To your Amish community, and you buy it in a quart jar with a white screwed-on lid, or a ball, with the ring and the lid. That's lasses.
But Bob, not many Amish out here in L.A.
No, you don't have a buggy lane. got buggy lanes in Ohio and Tennessee.
Got
bigots.
A whole lot of, you know what? We got a whole lot of stuff out here. The Amish haven't made. Oh, speaking of Amish or Amish-like, I'm not sure what they are, Mennonites or something. Have you seen, now we're going to a whole other realm. Have you heard of a show called Pure?
Oh, yeah, I have. I haven't seen it, but I've heard of it.
I watched a couple of episodes. Very interesting. What is it, the Amish Mafia Mall or something? I'm like...
Well, what was it? Two, 3 years ago, we had the story of, the Amish Taliban, and this hardcore went around shearing off men's beards. Because, like, God doesn't... Amish God doesn't like you if you've ever had a shave.
Wow. What? Wow. Well, these people are going around killing other Amish and other people because they're selling cocaine or something. It was a trip, and about the guy. It's an interesting show. I'm like, oh no, they're selling cocaine, drug dealing Amish. Got to watch it.
We got Mennonites all over Northern California. Those are the guys that came and helped me rip out my carpet when my house flooded.
Oh no, they're wonderful people. They really really are. They're seriously pacifist, and they don't get all uppity about using power tools and stuff. I remember years and years and years ago, back in the 70s, a tornado ripped through a little town called Guin, G-U-I-N, Alabama, and the Mennonites up in
Lawrenceburg, Tennessee, up north of Lawrenceburg, jumped in the backs of pickup trucks, and somebody said, wait, you're in a truck. This is no time to stand on doctrine, brother. People are hurting. And grabbed chainsaws and got with it. The Chitlin discussion will not go away. Note from the Mac. Chitlins smell like boiling poop when they're cooking, just saying. This is true. This is why you do not cook them inside. You cook them outside, along with your collards.
And your ramps.
You don't do a big pot of ramps. Ramps are a flavoring. I haven't had my ramps. Damn it.
Yeah,
Ramps and yogurt is not a fucking thing, Tracy.
I'm sorry.
I'm having an idea.
Time out. Bob was getting an idea. Stop.
You know how you can take the yogurt with the onion powder and you can even grate the onion, and then you grate the cucumber into it and the dill and stuff, and you get the tzatziki
for the tzatziki.
Oh yeah, that's great.
What about work? Oh my God, work a little, not much. Oh Jesus, not much. Take a pass on the onion. A little bit of ramp, a little bit of ramp in there. Whoo! But no, I haven't had anything that I could really put any ramps with. I haven't even, some local pickers will show up and put a few bags up at the Wiggling Pig. I haven't seen ramps at the Wiggling Pig. It was a weird winter and it was a weirder spring. So, just saying.
Capitalism.
And by the way, Ron in Raleigh says, would I find Amish food in the ethnic food aisle? Ain't no Amish in North Carolina. Which is kind of funny, because in the early settlement patterns of the colonies, there were a shit ton of Anabaptists and Moravians who settled in North Carolina. And out of the Anabaptists and the Moravians is where you get the Amish. But never mind.
I'll stick to a hoagie.
Oh, now that hurts too. That hurts too. Absolutely.
Sorry, Bob.
No, it's okay. That's okay. Meanwhile, Randy tells me, he says, I'm on the progressive soup diet. And if you can stand the extra sodium, it tastes great. I've had a lot of soup. Campbell's beefy mushroom. And
that's very good.
Well, yeah, I think there's two hints of mushroom and one tiny piece of downer cow beef in it per can. It's like that.
I get better cans than that, apparently, because mine are actually chopped full of good stuff. So
No. We're not talking about the same soup.
Oh, you're not talking about the chunky.
No, plain Campbell's beefy mushroom.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm talking about the chunky.
The Progresso French onion, I've done a good bit of that. And it doesn't much resemble food. And I'm sorry it keeps coming back around to this, but damn it, brother gets hungry.
What about kabanchu? You haven't talked about that yet.
Who, what?
You're talking about gross. Kabanchu. It's a fermented tea.
Kombucha.
Yeah.
Kombucha. Yeah, no, pass. And I did, once upon a time, I did taste the Mexican delicacy of corn smut. Because I found some in an international market, and it's like, well, damn, I'm buying one can of that.
Corn smut?
Explain, please.
It's a fungus. Let me see if I can...
mushrooms.
Well, but this is a
gross
fungus.
Slimy fungus?
This is a fungus that attacks corn. And it's called huitlacoche. And it just makes the corn look...
Yeah, I know what that is. It's good. It's good. I've had it.
Oh, but it's
delightful.
But it's disgusting to behold.
It's hard.
It looks like the elephant man grew on an ear of corn.
Delicious.
Wait, do I get a cowbell for that?
Yes.
I think you get another one, Bobby. Get two for that.
I'll stop at one. I don't want to get all proud. Because, you know, Sparky will threaten me with C-clamp again, and that would hurt. Hey, we're almost at 8 o'clock, so this would be a good time to mention that we're in a we got $320 to raise. And if we don't, that'll make for a reverb-inducing $520 fundraising hole on Monday. And just by way of a program announcement, I have no reason to think there will not be a program on Monday. But I have a 9 a.m. appointment with the surgeon. And he's not going to want to talk about doing anything to me because I'm way out. I'm way outside his league. But we're just going to do some strategizing and thinking about, you know, how to approach all this stuff. And, of course, you know, with no coverage, I'm private pay now, so it'll be like, you know, $100-$150 cash on the barrel head just to talk to him. So that's where we are. And even though one listener once referred to me possibly ever someday raising the fundraising goal here at the Horn, so I could do something stupid like pay for health insurance. He said, "Oh no, Bob, you can't tax the Horn family for your health care." Well, I mean,
excuse me, what?
No, huh? Just that he said that. Because you know, me getting to stay alive constitutes a tax on the Horn community.
Okay.
But anyway, that's, you know, that's all part of it. And so we got $320 to raise, and some of that, I'm just telling you straight up, will be spent on a surgeon consult. Hoo-wee! Party! But we got $320 to raise this evening. 10 at 32, 32 at 10, 1 at 320, 2 at 160, 4 at 80, 8 at 40, 16 at 20, 32 at 10, 64 at 5, 128 at 250. 256 at a buck and a quarter. And no, we're not going to 512 because I don't even think PayPal will accept that. But anyway, that's where we are.
Okay, well, put me down for a challenge for this really cool word. I don't know how we're going to work this in a challenge, but I was reading something about this editorial that W.E.B. Du Bois wrote, and he was talking about segregation. And he used this the coolest word that I've ever heard. And I'm pretty sure since you love words so much, you've heard of this word, shibboleth. So,
oh, sure, sure, shibboleth.
That is the coolest word ever. So if you can work that into a sentence that anybody can work, can figure out how this word is used, then you got a $25 challenge coming from me, Bob.
Okay, well, there's then Tracy's $25 shibboleth challenge is on the table, and I will leave it. If people want to answer the challenge and use it in a sentence, I think that would be highly appropriate.
No, you. I want you because everybody has.
To I can use a tray. I think I know.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay,
what is it?
Okay, the idea of tax increases are shibboleth to Republicans.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes. Yes. Bob, okay. What do you think?
It's like sacrilege, right?
Well, it's not so much sacrilege. It's a word that has something that has an empty meaning.
It's something that a group hangs on to.
Yeah.
Even long after it is proven to be untrue, irrelevant, or non-existent.
Bullshit.
It's bullshit. Yes. But yeah. Shibboleth is what you learn to call it when you go to Harvard, like W.E.B. Yes. Du Bois did.
Yeah, so it's calling it it's calling something bullshit without saying bullshit.
Right, so that people will continue to invite you to their New England boiled dinners.
So when I saw that word, I had to look up, I'm like, first of all, I'm like, when I was trying to pronounce it, I'm like, what the fuck? So thank God for the internet and the Merriam-Webster dictionary on the internet because it pronounced it for me. Because I'm like, that looks like something from the Bible, which it is from the Bible. And I'm like, okay, what the fuck does it mean? And then I looked it up. I'm like, oh, so basically everything the Republicans say.
Right. Like, Let's see. I think Rick had a winner there, or America would be safer if everybody had a gun.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's another right-wing shibboleth. And then of course I would imagine that in the context in which W.E.B. Du Bois used it, it probably had to do with things that white people say about black folks.
Yes.
Speaking of which. There was this little moment this morning on Morning Joe, you know, I do. So Maxine Waters appeared.
Wait a minute, Bob. You did
Max
the wrong.
Max Pax was on Morning Joe this morning?
Yes.
Squint and the Meat Puppet, Bob.
Yes, Squint and the Meat Puppet. Absolutely. And so they turned the questioning over to Donnie Deutsch, clueless New York white guy, and Willie Geist, clueless NBC News white guy.
Oh, no, they did not.
And
is
they
going to try to gang up on Max Pax?
And they, and Auntie wasn't having none of it. You know, she's Auntie Maxine now, right?
Yeah, she has reached that level of, you know, because she, well, I call her Max Pax because she's all that.
No, but she, I mean, that's become a thing out in the internet. She's Auntie.
Oh, really?
Is she to her fans.
Is she the lady who has the funny, does she have the funny hairdo, Bob?
Don't go there. Don't go there. Don't do that.
I'm joking.
No. I know. Okay. Yeah. O'Reilly. Right. Yeah.
Bye,
Bill.
Bye. Hi. Oh, yeah.
Don't let the door hit you where the good Lord split you, dude. Or maybe you should, actually.
Well, maybe that might be something that he likes.
Hey.
But he's
you are hell and be damned to sing tonight, aren't you, Rick?
I am.
Didn't he get like a $25 million golden shower parachute?
Yeah, I read something today that by the time add up what he got paid to go away with what the women got paid for what he did to them, it gets up around north of $80 million Fox paid out.
So I guess crime does pay after all, if you're rich enough.
Well, I'm telling you, I put the plan on the table last night. It's easy enough. I can get hired by Fox for one day and come back and have the horn funded forever.
There you go.
But anyway, so Donnie Deutsch and Willie Geist got after her, or tried to, saying, well, you say you won't work with President Trump, but I mean, that's great on the campaign trail, but he's president now. Don't you have to work with him because he's president? Because he's president.
Trump. They're fucking idiots.
And she just went, no. And she just said, no, and kept on going and just blistered. Oh, Jesus. If Comrade Kumquat was watching, his skin was boiling.
How bad was it, Bob?
It was bad. She said, this man does not deserve to be president. This man does not have the dignity to be president. This man ought not be president. This is a man who admit... And it's when she said, you know, he admitted he sexually assaults women. Yeah, but that was then. He's president now. And I got in trouble. I got in trouble because I tweeted and I said, you know, this is the epitome of cluelessness, watching Donnie Deutsch and Willie Geist white-splain to Representative Maxine Waters.
How did you get in trouble?
Oh, Willie Geist didn't like it.
Oh, he responded to you?
Yes.
What happened?
Well, I will tell you. Because it's funny. Because, I mean, I'm so white, I burn under the refrigerator bulb, okay? We've established that a long time ago. And he said, where is it? This is genuinely pathetic, Bob. Ironic you don't see the inherent racism in suggesting Rep. Waters needs to be treated with kid gloves. I didn't see it. I didn't say she needed to be treated with kid gloves. I said it was that they were cluelessly white-splaining. And the clueless white guys don't even know what white-splaining is. So I shot him a note back and said, assumes facts not in evidence. But the fact that two white guys, but you have to get along with him. He's President Trump now.
Just like the Republicans got along with Obama?
Exactly.
Right.
And they tried bringing that up. The Republicans said they wanted him to be a one-term president. And she did not. She did not say, well, yeah, I know that. But the fact of the matter is, tell me how many times Barack Obama bragged about grabbing women by their genitals and having to eat a mouthful of Tic Tacs because he just randomly had to kiss women. No, the only reason you're going to be a one-term president was because, you know, he was, say it, Tracy.
Black.
Thank you. Right, exactly.
Same reason they wanted to get rid of Obamacare. They didn't like his name pinned to it because he was black. Stupid motherfuckers.
That's just the, you know, that's putting it lightly. Hey, let me pop over real quick because Clarity's been with us since the very, near the very beginning. Clarity, good evening.
Hi. Can you hear me now?
Gotcha.
Okay. Yeah, I'm doing some trimming. Part of making a good breakfast, you need to remove the stems and stuff, and then boil it down and make a nice butter.
Yes. Yes.
And so I am doing a little recovery work with some old dried up Oregon green.
Yes, yes. I love organic oregano butter.
Exactly, and it's versatile. It's good for the skin too. You know, it's good for.
It rubs the hemp oil on its skin.
It rubs you the right way. You're right. There we go. Anyway, yeah, I've just been listening, and I've been taking enough antihistamines that my sense of taste is kind of out the window now, but that's how I cope with allergies.
It's that time.
Yeah, but
So what is it up there in Eastern Oregon that drives your sinuses around the bend?
Well, right now,
so you see what I did there, Bend, Oregon, huh? Huh?
Right now, it's the
cowbell time.
Poplars and the tree. It's tree pollen right now. We got a lot of cottonwood trees and poplars, and they put out a world of pollen. And then, you know, as things dry out, the dust also aggravates my rhinitis. We got this very fine soil that blows around. Some of it's, you know, St. Helens dust, and some of it's just sand that's been plowed, tilled now for 120 years here locally. So it gets a little finer every time they plow their field, and it just blows everywhere. But I was going to comment that when I lived in Oakland, somebody told me that they took their chitlins and put them in the washing machine and ran them through a cycle with bleach before they cooked them.
Well, you know, they're kind of radical in Oakland, Clarity. And I got to tell you, that's about as radical a thing as I've ever heard done to a chitterling.
Well, she said that nobody's ever gotten sick in her family, so I guess she had the good cleaning technique.
Oh, yeah, cold running water, right.
Well, she said, you know, not to, you know, put a lot in, but she just said put a little bit of bleach in and just run them through a cold water cycle, you know, and she said that cleans them up real good, and, you know, you don't have to, you know, all the water goes out with your wash. It doesn't, you know, stink up your kitchen sink and that stuff. But, yeah, chicharrones, what the Mexicans call their, I think, is their fried chitlins.
Well, isn't that sort of a catch-all term in Mexican Spanish for, like, pork rinds? Because, I mean, our pork rinds now are packaged bilingually, even here in West Virginia, and it says pork rinds, chicharrones.
Well, they're creep. That's the stealth Mexican, trying to take over like Sharia law. You know, pretty soon they'll have you being saying "si" and "adios" and all those real deep lingual things. And next thing you know, there won't be any more bread in the store. You'll just only be able to buy tortillas.
You mean like in the Mexican synagogues where they already say "hasta la bagel"?
That's yeah. Oh, Sam Cedar played a thing the other day about, that was you talking about the Hebrew, the Hebrew liberals. They're the ones that are really threatening.
Today's Jews are not really good, proper, decent Hebrews. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. I love it. I love it. I love it when white European Christians define who gets to be whatever. It's just another one of those moments of cluelessness, kind of like what was on Morning Joe this morning.
Yeah, and so there hasn't been anything else. I guess that was fake news saying that Morning Joe was morning with Mika, that they were having a conjugal relationship now.
Well, no, they're both. Who knows? It's not worth the brain cell, really, is it? But no, one thing I noticed is that a lot of, they get paid a lot of money and they get a lot of days off.
Although, also, they just have too much time on their hands.
Well, I mean, some mornings you get Joe but not Mika. Some mornings you get Mika but not Joe. And then yesterday I saw this empty set where there was nobody left but Mike Barnicle to ask people questions.
Just in time.
And that's where that's when you start thinking maybe the ship's been holed below the waterline.
No, they're just corporate, just good corporate media, getting the bang for your buck, not throwing money away on substitute talking heads. They're just going to work with the staff and hopefully breeding someone to step up when Joe puts his hand where somebody doesn't think it should be. I don't know.
Hey. Oh, wait a minute. I think the pollen's getting to me too. Wait a minute. Cliff Sudis! Okay, sorry. All better.
Yeah, I hear that. I would also add that talking about food is really, sharing the deeper things of life. And my mom was from the South, and she liked to make hush puppies, my brothers didn't like them because she put onions in them.
Well, of course she put onions in them. They're hush puppies. Now quit it.
Well, but her mom would make a special batch for the boys.
No onions.
Without onions. So that's
those mollycoddling grandparents. They do that shit, and then the next thing you know, you got an entire dissipated generation of people who won't eat onions and hush puppies.
Well, and that's why the Buddhists have to say, don't visualize all beings as mothers because of the United States. Visualize all beings as your grandmother because you probably get along better with granny than mom.
Well, that's because granny made all the granny's all done making mistakes, and granny actually knows what she's doing now. But
yes,
see, I love hush puppies.
Oh, not all grannies. Don't say that. Oh, not
okay.
All grannies. Oh,
but
no,
with the minced onion.
My mother is. Yeah, no, we're not going to go there.
Okay. We'll, I guess
that blanket was just.
We'll save that for the psychotherapy hour, Jules. But no, I like to make them and use, just like you'd make so-called Mexican cornbread that I grew up with, chopped up jalapenos, chopped up onions, and a can of that Green Giant Mexicorn with the little flecks of green and red bell pepper in them, and put them in. Oh, stop it.
Okay.
But that's kind of hardcore. But yeah, onions at least.
Well, I do a baked cornbread I do it with soy milk, and I put in the green chilies, you know, the canned green chilies.
I bet that's pretty good. I bet that's good. You don't have to have the buttermilk.
And then I put in the mixed, the succotash mixed red corn and the bell peppers in with that, so you get a sweetness from the corn, but you also get a little bit of fire from the Anaheim chilies.
That's nice. Yeah,
that's real nice. Well, it's nice too that, you know, you don't have to have, if you're cooking something in your fry pan, that you don't have to wait till your hush puppies are done. You can have the cornbread bacon.
Most bizarre thing I've ever experienced in the world of cornbread is something they serve at the Daniel Boone Hotel on the campus of Berea College in Berea, Kentucky, and they're ever so proud of it. And it's called spoon bread. And it's like somebody went to make cornbread, somebody set out to make cornbread and a souffle, and they fucked up and get it all in the same pan, and it's just weird. It's there's cornmeal, but it's real eggy.
Oh, okay.
And rich. And I mean, and you know, they bring it around like they're proud of it and shit, and you're like, oh, okay, and you tend to, oh, you know, and you're trying to be a good guest, and you're like, oh, you know, this is delicious. Where's the cat? Yeah.
Frittata, and they didn't have any sausage.
Yeah, that, right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Hey, Jules.
Yeah, Bill.
I have it. Oh, let me do this before we go any further. We now have $65 of challenges on the table. Tracy's $25 Shibboleth Challenge and a $40 challenge courtesy of a brother deacon. That $40 challenge, your $40 will get doubled, but the said brother deacon will triple the said challenge if we can convince a trumpanzee or a green weenie to toss two old hickories in the collection plate. So, If there's a green weenie out there who wants to kick in $40, a certain brother deacon will turn that into 120. Whoa! Yep. And then if Tracy's challenge gets met, that would be 50. So that's 170. So doing the ciphering, 360, 290. That'd take us down to $190, which would be a big, 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 giant, humongous, no kidding, help. Now, Jules, I'm told you want to talk. I am told you want to talk about the French election.
Oh, I was just asking if you had discussed it, because it's such a major impact on what's going on in Europe, and what goes on there could very well impact us even more. They have a huge election coming up. I mean, it's many people are saying that it's could actually be a cause a shift in the European Union if depending on who gets elected. I'm sure everyone's heard of Marie Le Pen. She's like this major radical Trumpish like character. I hate to say it, but yes, they do have their own Trumps. Believe me, Europe is king on the
racist. Oh, they're filthy
list
with fascists right now.
And that's why, like the Netherlands, they just had their election, and it turned out much better than what, you know, it could have been. But the thing is that it comes up Sunday. And if you have the time and you can hop on Twitter or Facebook and harass people in France not to vote for her, that would be wonderful. I have a separate account. I do like campaigning in Europe, so Because I Le Pen absolutely cannot get in office. That would be an
She's horrible. She's terrible. She's
total disaster.
Well, she's a fascist, and her, you know, one of her promises is getting out of the EU. If France gets out of the EU collapses.
And not only that, she has stated that Jews, if they want to have that, they will no longer be able to have dual citizenship. They need to make a decision whether they want to be
French or Israeli.
French or Israeli. That's the bottom line there. She's totally, totally against immigration. I mean, really, really hardcore, really, really fucking hardcore far right, fascist, major
scumbag,
major
scumbag. You left out scumbag.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, she's just absolutely awful. Well, her top runner, Francisco's Alfilon, he was running up high in the polls, right? Well, he got caught with a scandal saying that he was paying his wife and his kids to do work because he was in the government. He's in the government. But so anyway, this third guy, and this is absolutely amazing, Emmanuel Macron, has come up. He just came out at like the first of the year. I think it was in December. He started his campaign. And he, the last combined poll that they did, he was 2 points ahead of Le Pen. But I don't know if people understand the way French elections work or the way they do this. They have several different votes. And
they have rounds. Sunday, they have rounds.
Yeah. Sunday is a runoff election. So the top two people will go on to another election, the main election, May 7th, I believe it is. And right now, Macron is looking like he's really, really going to do some good here. He's kind of a center-left kind of dude, but he kind of encompasses a lot of both sides, and he seems to have somewhat of a decent head on his shoulder. He's never been an elected official, but he was the financial advisor or something or another for their current president. So at one point,
one of the things that underpins this election that makes it interesting is France is kind of having its LBJ moment, because it's sort of unheard of for a French president not to run for a second term. But François Hollande is so unpopular, he just said that this would be pointless.
2% in the latest polls. You want to talk about low in the elections? 2% is what he's, or not in the elections, but his rating right now, the current president. And so, yeah, there ain't no way he was going to run again. But it's an interesting battle. And right now, you know, Macron is probably the best candidate out of the ones that they have because of where he's running in the polls and his actual views. I mean, they're a little bit off. He's been a little bit shifty with marijuana and a few other things. But all in all, he's not a terrible candidate, you know what I mean? Especially when compared to Le Pen and maybe some of the others that are in the running. So I thought I'd bring that up. I know most people are like, well, fuck Europe, you know, but no, seriously.
I don't know of anybody who's disinterested in Europe, because between what's happened here, what happened with Brexit, and what could potentially happen with France, there's a lot of reason to be nervous.
Yeah, and Germany has a big election coming up. I mean, if France turns out okay, then we still have to worry about Germany later in the year. But it's very, very frustrating what's happening over there, because there's such a sentiment for this populist right, you know what I mean? And it's really fucking scary. I mean, really bad. Actually, the biggest problem in France is that so many people are saying that they're going to abstain from the elections, the final election in May. which would really, really put Macron at a disadvantage. So,
well, and there's the little thing, there's the little problem of the shooting of the police officers yesterday.
Oh, yeah. That,
ISIS, ISIL, Daesh, whatever, assholes, jumped out and took and took credit almost immediately. And, of course, I my personal guess is it was designed to try to influence the elections one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't help but think that they would dearly love to have a, you know, a fascist in office.
Is it possible that Pooty Poot is encouraging the violence somehow?
Pooty Poot is up to his sweet, cuddly eyebrows in all of this.
There has been several allegations. I'm sorry. I apologize.
No, that's okay.
No, that's okay, Jules. I was being silly. Go ahead.
There have been a number of allegations that Russia has been sticking their nose in, using fake news, etc., to try to affect the elections. They've really, really hit up against Macron in attacks, quote unquote, supposedly. You know, if that's what the case is, but he's had some opposition with or had some problems with fake news generated by supposedly a Russian outlet. So. But yeah, there's been some, I don't know how you'd say, you know, intervening, so to speak, if that's the case. But it's been a very interesting thing to watch, especially compared to, you know, the American elections, etc. And like I said, you mentioned that, you know, if France pulls out of the EU, then the EU is, pretty much gone. Because that would mean the main supporter in the EU would be Germany. I mean, they're strong. They're lead, you know, a leader now, but without France, yeah.
No, the whole idea of the EU is predicated upon the economic and financial strength of France and Germany together.
Yeah, exactly.
Proof that you can do without war what you couldn't do via war.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's I mean, it's becoming interesting. I mean, Europe's just an interesting situation altogether, especially with the recent elections in Turkey with Erdogan. So, gaining, you know, they actually, if this was a rigged election, who knows? But I'm sure you talked about him winning this election, I think it was last week.
Yeah,
right?
And more particularly the fact that the election was dodgy. And Geezer Disgustus couldn't wait to make his congratulatory phone call.
Exactly. I mean, that was just absolutely positively sickening that he was in such a rush for that. But I guarantee you Russia was had their fingers in some of that because they are really, really wanting to get with Turkey and use Syria and Iran to run a pipeline for oil. Up through to Russia, so
it always comes back to hydrocarbons, doesn't it? Yeah.
Oh hell yes.
And I have big thanks to send out to Frank and to Charlene. Thank you both of you. Tracy's Shibboleth challenge has been met, as has been a certain Brother Deacon's challenge. I'm sorry, it looks like we're not going to get a green weenie or a an actual right winger. They're not allowed here, so I mean the right wingers aren't. So I mean it happens. It's just, you know, even the note from Dan Snyder wasn't real. Come on, I got something. I just because I like for us to all have a giggle from time to time. I've got something here that is, I appreciate good comedic writing. I presume everybody saw the picture of Vice President and man terrified to be at dinner alone with a woman, Mike Pence, soul neck geek. I presume everybody saw him the picture of him boldly striding up to the binoculars in South Korea at the DMZ. Well, over at Deadspin on the concourse, you can run across some mighty fine writing, and this is mighty fine writing by Drew Magri. Say hello to our elderly Lego Man Vice President. Wearing his varsity vice presidenting jacket and standing with an intensity reserved almost exclusively for constipation sufferers near the demilitarized zone separating North and South Korea. Supposedly, Pence wasn't meant to go outside during his visit to the DMZ, but this man lives for the fucking danger and for easily manipulated photo ops. If you haven't seen it, just Mike Pence, DMZ binoculars should get you there. He really does look like a character from one of the fucking Lego movies. He does. So he summoned the pair of Indiana basketballs necessary to walk out there, pull a fearless boy, gaze notwithstanding, and show everyone that he is not intimidated by the world's most desperate people. Given the above photo, I assume he then hopped on a step stool and inserted two quarters to see what those pesky North Koreans are up to. He didn't even need an umbrella. Take that, rain! Are you shitting bricks yet, North Korea?
Was he wearing a bomber jacket? Yes. Oh, good God.
Are you shitting bricks yet, North Korea? Because Penis Man here wants you to know that your days of being a horrifically destitute country in which the poor and enslaved would almost certainly bear the brunt of any additional outside military aggression are numbered. With the same kind of steely eye that Sarah Palin gave Russia from her skinnin' porch, Pence bravely stared down a country where people have to eat bark soup and declared, "You shall not pass." "I thought it was important that we went outside," he said. "I thought it was important that people on the other side of the DMZ see our resolve in my face." Dude, you're fucking afraid to eat dinner with a woman. Drew Magri, brilliant. Just freaking brilliant. But when you see the picture, you'll go, yeah, he is. He's a Lego character.
I thought he was Race Bannon, Bob, from Clutch Cargo.
Johnny Quest, he is, but now he's Lego Man.
Well, I mean, what do you expect? Trump is afraid to shake hands with a woman. I mean, look at the way he treated Angela Merkel. You know, I mean, it runs in the family up there, right?
I think Trump's not afraid to shake hands with women. I think he just reaches the wrong way.
That very well could be. He's wanting to shake the wrong thing.
He grabs a different part, as Trumpansies are wont to do.
He just looks very uncomfortable sitting next to a woman in the Oval Office.
Well, hey, everybody, I got to run, so y'all have a good weekend, okay?
Well, hey, enjoy the sports bar. Weekend.
I sure will, and hopefully the Bulls will come back. They were down by 20, but then they came back to within like about 9 points, and we'll see where they are now.
And promise her you didn't find her on the the Iowa alum trolling pages. Just say that.
Nah, we found each other on Plenty of Fish. Yeah, she said my profile talks about how I like Iowa sports teams and the Chicago Cubs and stuff. So she lived in Chicago for 10 years, so, and she was born in Illinois, so. A lot in common there. So you all take care, all right?
All right, we'll see you, Rick.
All right, see you, Rick. Gotcha.
Take care.
Good luck tonight.
Bye, Rick.
Yep, thanks. Bye, everybody.
Good luck? Who said good luck?
I did. Well, you know, I mean, hey, any day is a, you know, you got to have good luck on any date.
Well, okay. I mean, just okay.
You don't want to have, you know, a shitty date, right?
Right, and okay, maybe that's a matter of luck. I always assumed that Billable Rick was just so suave and so debonair that he wouldn't need anything as crass or recherché as luck.
Well, we all need a little sometimes.
I mean, he's gonna get in the Aston Martin. And head over there, and he's got his Cubs jacket and all of his. Who needs luck with something like that, right?
He has a Chevy Volt, Bob.
Don't spoil the imagery, Sparky.
Well, hey, I got to bail out of here, too. Karen wants to take me to get my birthday dinner.
Is that what they call it? Is that what they call it now?
One day of the year, yeah, you get a freebie. Here in Georgia, yeah, most restaurants will give you a free meal, so might as well take advantage of it.
Yeah, because you're not a senior citizen yet. Might as well get that free.
I got an ARP card, though, but still, that don't make you a senior citizen, does it?
What, are you over 50 now?
Yep. Old man.
Have fun, young man.
Where are you going?
Probably to a place called Provino's, not too far from here, an Italian restaurant.
Ah, good. Yeah, stay away from the chains. Good call.
Nice talking to everybody.
Happy birthday, Steve.
All right.
Happy birthday. Well, I'll sing you happy birthday and send it to you in a voice message.
Perfect. I appreciate y'all.
All right, you take care. Hey, Snork.
Be well, dear.
Snork, we haven't heard from you all evening, my friend.
I've been having microphone problems until just a few minutes ago.
Well, then this is well placed on my yes.
Yeah,
serendipitous even.
Throughout the other times, because earlier I tried to say something a few times and I realized nobody was hearing me. Then I made myself some nachos and had those throughout the show. So there was a few times where the discussion got a little bit too close to chitlins.
snob.
But I'm going to the science walk or march tomorrow in two different towns that have it 4 hours apart. So looking for some things there, and still continuing on to work with my locals to see if our local Democratic Party is salvageable or whether I need to be supporting a new party. Because Iowa messes up everybody.
That's true.
I personally think that we just need instant runoff voting. Currently in Iowa, if you're doing anything like working or unable to make it to a caucus, you don't get the vote.
Right. And well, of course, that's the primary system, not the general. I think there are pluses and minuses to the caucus system. On the one hand, I think there's, never having participated in one, it feels awfully democracy-ish. You know, like you got to show up and you got to participate. And
yeah,
you talk about which candidate you like and which one you don't and which one comes in second for you and, you know, who you just can't stand and all of that. Whereas
you don't even have to think about it until each vote. You get like 10 to 15 minutes between each vote to go talk to people from the disaffected groups. So, like after Edwards lost, then it would be between the Hillary people and the Obama people back in 2008. So you just keep wandering around until you find a vote. But again, the only thing I dislike about it is that it means that you have to be available during one specific 3 hour. And the last time caucuses were held, it wasn't 3 hours. And many of them, they ended up debating until like 2 a.m. in the morning. It's not done until there is an answer.
Well, and as Barkway points out in the chat room, caucuses seem too easy to mess with from what I gathered watching all the videos of people challenging the counts and claiming election fraud. There's that. Maybe the primary process does open it up, you know, just going and voting, maybe it opens it up more.
And really, people should be thinking about it beforehand. If my candidate doesn't win, who do I want to be second? And I think the vote's completely different when you know that you don't lose your entire vote voting for one person, that you might be able to take your next favorite person. And you can do it immediately in an Iowa caucus. The big thing that I was concerned with is the ability for somebody to just write down on a paper what the count was, and there's no accountability for, the people that are attending don't sign anything, don't even look over to see what number really got reported.
Well, you know, the other thing that you said is, you know, can I stay a Democrat or do I need a different party? You know, there's not going to be a three-party system in 2017 or 2020, for that matter, 2018 or 2020, for that matter.
No, but basically we're either going to get organized or a Republican's going to win. This is an extremely Republican area. If we don't do something bold, we're just giving the Republicans. And most of the seats in Iowa don't even run the Democratic Party challenger.
Well, and that's, you know, that's another problem in its own right. You know, when you've got a party that cannot mount challenges to, in every or something approaching every election, it's bad for the idea of representative government.
Yes. So I decided to get involved. I'm on the Democratic Party platform for this district.
Good.
And
hey, that's awesome.
It's just, there's just not that many people. It's really easy to get there.
Well, yeah, and you know, that's one thing that's been apparent throughout the Indivisible process. Most county Democratic Executive Committee meetings have 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 people in them. But because of the Indivisible efforts, you've got Democratic Executive Committee meetings that are where you got 100, 200 people showing up.
Yes.
And that's a good sign.
We've had two meetings since the election now. In both meetings, we've had over 25 people. This is a small county.
Yeah, I imagine that's quite amazing for you, because I know you do live in quite a rural type area, so...
Yeah, we even have people show up that have hats, which means they're Amish.
Oh, well, that's pretty amazing. Jeez, though.
As compared to llamas with hats.
Yeah, well, I meant, you know...
Which is an animation.
Takes something to get them angry to come in.
Yeah, hell yeah, it does.
So, you know, I think if the Democratic Party realizes the anger and realizes how they ride that wave, they've got some chances here. If they don't, they have no chance. So far, it's all riding on what's happening in the district beside us, which is Stephen King's district. And the complaints from the previous... elections candidates were, she got not a dime from all the commercials that the Democratic Party ran saying you've got to send the DCC money so that they could fund her challenge to Bloom, and $0 went to Iowa. Races weren't dealt competitive enough. They had to go protect places like San Francisco. So, and already I'm seeing that our neighboring state is having the same issue, that Nancy Pelosi will not challenge a Speaker of the House and will not allow money to be sent to them.
That's bullshit. That's absolute bullshit. I mean, this is why the Democratic Party is not going to get anywhere. I mean, they think that, first of all, they went too liberal with Clinton, and then they, you know, they do this shit. They don't support the candidates that really need to be supported. And it's going to be their downfall. I mean, if they can't get their asses together, then they're not going to get shit done, literally.
To me, the officers of the other party should be the first ones that are targeted, not the last. And certainly not completely banned.
Dianne Feinstein got an earful the other day at a town hall she had.
Yes, and...
most of the people said, step aside, don't run again.
I support that.
They held up retire signs.
We have somebody just stepping in now from Hollywood. Just moved back to Iowa to run for governor. I'm not against that. I'd like to hear more about the person rather than the circumstances of him moving here shortly.
Who is that?
I only read it a little bit ago, and I'm really bad with names. we had one of the hosts from Saturday Night Live that did the news. He ran in our last election and lost. But he didn't do horribly. So things are moving ahead, and I think it's better than not running at all.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if there's not people that are... I mean, there are so many of these districts that there are literally no challenges against the Republican, you know? And you look at the state, how the states are arranged and what the state governments are doing, that's fucking twice as bad.
Yeah, during the last presidential election, the ballot here was mostly empty on the Democratic Party side, and you'd see some things where six people can run, and you would see six R's. You did not see a Democratic Party person running.
Well, look at what happened in Georgia in the 6th district, where there was only one Democrat running and 19 Republicans, but for this one race. But how much support did the Democratic Party give this young man running? It's like the only support that I saw was from like the Daily Kos and all these other people, but I don't remember hearing anything from all the emails that I was getting about this the young man running. I didn't remember seeing anything from the DNC.
Yeah, I remember an earlier one where they were actually using that as why they needed to raise money, because they were told that they had no chance. And there was two other Democratic Party people running that they favored.
Right.
And they ended up with 0.1 and 0.3% of the vote.
But it's like, come on, people, get your heads out of your asses, for goodness sakes. It's not like we're putting up a fight for anything.
It just keeps going on and on and on and on. Look at the unnecessary drama that was created within the last 24, 48 hours by Bernie. Now, I don't know how many times I have to make it clear. I supported Bernie in the primary. I support Bernie's principles. I support Bernie's platform. But, you know, I voted for my party's nominee in the general election so as to try to keep millions of Americans from getting fucked by Trump. But
no Lou.
Well, yeah. So somebody asked him in the last couple of days on this nationwide Democratic Unity tour that he's on with Tom Perez. They said, you know, is John Ossoff a progressive? And Bernie said, well, I don't know. And so 24 hours later, he's trying to pick up the pieces, and he says, let me be very clear. It is imperative that John Ossoff be elected congressman from Georgia's 6th district and that Democrats take back the U.S. House. I applaud the energy and grassroots activism in John's campaign. His victory would be an important step forward in fighting back against Trump's reactionary agenda. Why didn't you just say that the first fucking time?
Well, that's right up there with who was it? Who did the same thing to Bernie Sanders when who was congressman?
Oh no, you mean when John Lewis said, "I don't know if he's I don't know if he supported civil rights."
Right.
I don't remember him being in Selma or something like that.
Right.
Yeah, can we please stop shooting ourselves in the foot?
But exactly. It's the same. It's like people united. Can we take a page from the Republican playbook? They don't get it. It's like,
you mean Reagan's 11th commandment, thou shalt not criticize a fellow Republican.
Right.
That worked like gangbusters.
And it's still working. I mean, these people know that Donald Trump is a righteous, rolling piece of shit. Human excrement. He's more foul than human excrement, okay?
Yes.
But they still support him, okay? They are still locked in, you know, they are so afraid of Mitch, I have no neck, McConnell, that they do not care. They don't care. They're just they're going to support him regardless of what's going to happen. They will go down with the fucking sinking ship. Democrats will not do that. And it's like, what the fuck? I don't get this shit. I don't get it. I do not get it. I don't get it. Can somebody explain it to me?
Let me add to that, Tracy, that in the coming week, you know, we've got the budget, the debt ceiling showdown coming.
Oh, here we go. Here we go. We're going to do another.
No, there'll be some drama, but I'm going to save it for more in Monday because it's too much to get into in 9 minutes. But right. Just remember, that's coming, and it's going to be nasty, as presaged by the fact that, of all people, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating son and future king of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, the man who forgot to become an American for a really long time, said, oh, I'm worried about a government shutdown. That fucker shut the government down!
He shut it down!
You know, damn!
These motherfuckers.
Right. You know, you just want to look at him and go, theocrat, please.
Yeah. I like that. You need to give yourself a cow. No, that's a cowbell.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. theocrat, please. But see, you didn't say it like I.
No, yeah, I didn't. I can't. Remember? Light bulb, okay. Me, burn.
Okay. Let me do it one more time.
Okay.
Theocrat, please.
Okay. Yes, okay. By God, there it is. In all its glory. Yes, I could never do that. And by the way, thank you, Tracy. Your challenge got met. So between a certain
Brother Deacon's challenge
and Tracy's challenge,
I'll forget.
We are down to $190 to go in fundraising. And if we could knock all of that down right lickety-split, it would be just freaking awesome so that we don't have a hole going into Monday. I guess I have some mea culpas to extend. I got a note from a longtime dear friend of the program, Darlene in Connecticut, talking about foie gras. Darlene says, have you ever seen what they do to the geese to make foie gras? The poor animals are literally crying. They're in so much agony. It really is torture. It's sickening and utterly disturbing to watch. I can't understand the mindset that came up with that process in the first place. No animal should be put through that, and I can't understand why someone would want to eat the end product of a creature that was so brutally mistreated to its death. It seems somewhat dismissive or maybe a bit extreme on your part, Bob, to equate one's concern for this animal abuse as being akin to getting all PETA crazy. I'm a meat eater, and the daughter, granddaughter, and sister of hunters that never even thought it appropriate or sportsmanlike to make animals suffer to put the meat on the table. If you can watch what they do to make foie gras and still eat it, then the more power to you. I've seen it. It's not like we keep it in Kroger's and Walmart around here. I've had it in the occasional meal. It's tasty, but like everything else, I mean, I guess there's some people that don't like it, but like everything else in our industrial capitalist food system, we are kept separate and apart from what we eat. Just like, you know, people think electricity comes from the wall, from the switch on the wall or the socket in the wall, and they never think about the poisoned communities in Appalachia where the mountains were blown up. That's a feature, not a flaw. That's by design. And so, I mean, and sometimes I do. And it's not with anything nearly as exotic as foie gras. Back when I was eating food, sheesh. You know, I could sit down at a sushi joint, and I love ahi tuna. Okay, I just freaking, it's God, I love it. But then you realize, well, we've just about overfished the poor tuna to extinction, and we've overfished everything because there's too many, you know, us. And then you turn around and go, okay, let's get all Malthusian and figure out who needs to go. So the whole thing is a conundrum. And I apologize for not being a big fan of geese. If it's any consolation, I do not like to eat goose flesh. They're greasy and kind of, I don't like it. I get that. And yeah, I have seen it. I didn't see the part where the geese were crying, but I mean, I saw where you know, it's a funnel, and it goes all the way down their long goose necks and straight into their stomach. And they just pour the corn to them. I'm not going to be flippant again. So I apologize, Darlene. I didn't mean to be crass and overly flippant. Who came up with it? Who jumped in the water and ate the first oyster? You know, we know from middens on the California coast. If you excavate down from the top of the midden to the bottom of the midden, the indigenous people were eating the really good shellfish first, and you can watch them go extinct as you come up the midden until they're eating little tiny things that, yeah. So that's, you know, usually desperation, not innovation, is how that happens. Yes, Parky.
Oh, I was going to say, I know where the electricity comes from.
Yeah.
Free electron of a conductor.
Well, that's true too. But something, you know, something's got to create it or generate it, I guess is more, the more appropriate term.
No, you put you push it out. It's like a big tube. You push electrons out the tube.
Oh. Okay.
From atom to atom.
Well, that's true. That's true, but. We've only got 3 minutes left in the program. I don't think we can sort all this out, Sparky.
I know. I just want to give you shit.
Well, he's just messing with you at this point.
Oh, I know. I know. And you know, it's especially delightful at 2 minutes before the close of the program.
I spent my whole life working with electricity, so.
Yeah, I know. Okay, one more note, because this is too good not to share. It may take us a couple of minutes over, but that's okay. Subject line, comfort food, from Steve, a member of the fraternity of Steve, Steve in China. Love the food porn, sure, but I think we need to take the notion of culling the herd a bit more seriously. The planet is dying, and humankind is overpopulating. A huge number are miserable, clothed in rags, eating garbage, waiting to die. In an insane netherworld of technological miracles, vast killing machines, maniacal demo dictators. All of which is true. These facts are not unrelated and do not go unnoticed by the power elite, by the class of free lunch eaters. They are, in fact, forever obsessed by this. Getting the slave to do the work of peeling sweet grapes is the very definition of divinity on this little planet. The white minority consume probably a fourth or a third of an entire world, this planet, not some newly discovered ball of gas light years and a billion lives beyond its scaly reach, while the other half or more of humanity lives in squalor, humiliation, sewer water. If only we could see ourselves. I think about this. I really, really do. As consumers of the vast bulk of resources, it is the industrialized first world that is killing itself so far. Civilization, outside of one's particular definition, is collapsing. Why not? So the diabolical reasoning goes, get rid of the excess cargo. Toss the murky, stinking surplus races. There comes a time when the point of no return is manifest even to the unobservant. Our time is largely past. It began in earnest when the notion of science became the general and applied system of world knowledge, and not just the occasional or amateurish pursuit of one or another lone genius. For us, for this world, the point of no return is about 200 years old. Like it or not, there's no way out for the vast majority, for the lumpen proletariat, for the misfits and the poor folks and the wrong colors, or religions, or cultures. Even when we like to think of ourselves as some fancy new kind of cyborg or nether-netted, ether-netted machine, just take a look at an entire generation of vidiots bumping and clunking into each other on the street, oblivious to the world inspiring or expiring around them. Good luck with that! Wars shall soon be fought on the African continent for a few drops of fresh drinking water. History has a way of catching up to everybody before anyone, including the historian, realizes what's going on. That's why it's made into a convenient little fiction called History. It took 2,000 years for the history of Western religio-economic civilization to succumb to the greater current of incipient science as a legitimate and legitimizing technological and social force. And it is instructive to recall that an English romantic poet, Coleridge, gave us the term itself. This, too, is no coincidence.
To perceive the change, to sense the danger hidden within the promise, is the very essence of imagination, of humanity, or of humility. But history, it just keeps on manuring and composting the world, thrive or perish, flesh or bone. And that is damned well true. And I don't want to look away from it. I don't want to pretend it isn't there. I know it is. Does it go away if we get rid of the 0.1% of the people on this planet who control all the wealth? Or do we just create another race to, and not race in terms of people, but another contest to try to become that 0.1%?
Yeah, that's what happens.
That's the deviltry of it. So, some especially chewy food for thought, courtesy of Steve in China, as we wrap up this Friday on the front porch. Thanks, everybody, for all that you have done all week long, all month long, and for as long as the horn has been here. Thanks, everybody. Thank you for sharing your precious finite time engaged in this little extended conversation, however you do. Thank you for your kind contributions that keep it going. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie, in the chat room, and happy birthday, Steve, our utility midweek chat room moderator. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox, Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest-working people, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all. Have a great weekend. Moran Monday will be here before we know it, and the Morans are already stacking up. Bye, y'all.